Mr. Stevens, Reel 4. So we were talking about when you were the advance through Germany. You mentioned some general points about the RAF. What next then?
It was outside Munich that Lieutenant Palmer, Peddler Palmer, although we'd been taught time and time again, if anybody stepped on an anti-personnel mine, freeze. But an infantryman stepped on an anti-personnel mine, Peddler Palmer ran to help him when he should have froze, and he stood on a mine, and he lost a foot.
Were there a lot of mines about?
Well, they were. Once we went into an orchard when the ground was frozen and thaw set in, and we realised we were in an orchard with anti-personnel mines all round, and we had to wait for it to be cleared before we could get out. But we went in when the ground was frozen and they just didn't appear to be there.
What about booby traps? Were you aware of the risk of booby traps?
We were aware, but I didn't experience any of that. Because being an artillery man, I didn't go into the houses for the first time or any of that nature.
What about, you wouldn't have been able to scavenge in Germany, I presume, since the...
Oh, yes. I provided them with a dinner in Germany. But then I purchased it.
Why? What was the difference?
Well, I just went to a farmer with pigs, asked him were he prepared to sell. It was more bartering than selling. And I killed the pigs and I gave him the head, which we didn't need, and took the pigs back to the battery.
How did you get on with the Germans generally during that phase?
You had very hard feelings towards them in Normandy and Belgium and what you were going to do when you got there. But you find that women and children and families are the same everywhere. You just can't feel, or I personally couldn't feel hatred or anger towards them. I did at one time speak to two or three student type people, young teenagers, and I said to them, you know, say what you like, you don't mind. And they said if the war had lasted another 6 months, it would have been reversed. They were indicating that Germany would have had the atom bomb and not us, and if they could have developed it quicker, it would have been us.
So what happened next then? What's the next thing you remember?
We were sent round we went to Paderborn, and hostilities had finished.
Do you remember the end of the war? VE Day?
It was only that we knew it was coming, we knew it was a minutes away, and there were celebrations and things like that, when we knew hostilities had finished completely. But we weren't in a situation like in Paris or anywhere like that, where you could go, we weren't allowed to fraternise anyway to start off with, and we were in Germany. You could celebrate differently in Belgium and France than you could in Germany. The relief was only amongst ourselves. We weren't sharing it with anybody, if you follow what I'm saying. Then we were sent out into the rural areas to bring in all the forced labour, the Poles and the Russians. You would go onto one farm, and the farmer would be crying, the Pole would be crying, because they didn't want to break up. You would go onto another farm, and you had to intervene quick before the Russian or Pole, whoever he was, stuck the pitchfork into the farmer for the way he had been treated. It was different in most cases. In some cases, there was a woman there who obviously had a baby and obviously been associating with one of the other labourers. They didn't like being spread out. But unfortunately, We had to take them back to the camps and put them where they was assigned. I can remember going into one German house, and by this time I'd got a little patter of German. I found I could pick up German better than I could French. And they came running out of the farm with baskets of eggs. I said, well, that's all right, I don't want them. And I said, Guten Abend, haben Sie keine Angst? Ich will nicht die Hüsch untersuchen. Haben Sie Gewehr, Pistole, ist besser Sie bringen. Selbstdefending, ich will nicht bestraffen sein. Which means, if you know you've got guns and munitions, bring them to me. If I find them myself, you're going to get punished. And then I would go in and say, couple of folks, you go there, and look around the farm. And I went into this bedroom, and I saw the woman's hand flash. And I went over and pulled the blanket back, and she had put a clock under it off the thing. And I brought the clock out again, put it back on the shelf, and said, I'm not a German soldier, I'm an English soldier. And put it back up on the shelf.
And how long were you doing all this for?
To be exact, I quite don't know, but for several weeks.
In the Paderborn area?
No, we've gone down to Hoxter in the Weser Valley by now. That was where I was carrying out that procedure. Hoxter in the Weser Valley.
And what happened next?
I got sent home on leave. And when I went back, I had to report.
When was the leave, do you know?
When? Not exactly. Might
doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
I got sent home on leave. And when I went back, I went into a regimental sergeant's mess where I was supposed to know everybody, and there was only one or two people there I knew. Because their D-mob number, they'd been sent back to a holding unit because they were ready for D-mob. And the battery sergeant major, who I didn't know at that time, told me the commanding battery commander wanted to see me. And I went in, and he said, Stevens, I understand that you have deferred discharge for a year, because I was a regular soldier. I said, yes, I have, but the confirmation hasn't come through. So he said, well, I can assure you the confirmation will be coming through, but strictly I should send you back up into Germany to a holding unit. He said, but if you agree to stay with us, that's okay. It'll cover me. So he said, and we would very much like you to stay. Of course, I was swelling a bit because they were calling me what a wonderful man I am. And I accepted. And 3 days later, I was told I was the senior NCO in charge of an advance party flying out to the Middle East, which he hadn't divulged to me at the time he was asking me to stay.
So, what happened? When was this that you went to the Middle East?
I implaned for the Middle East on the 30th of 1945.
October then?
Yeah.
And what happened when you got out there?
I landed at Casa Bonito, the airfield for Tripoli. The next day, I flew along to Almaza, the airfield for Cairo. From there, I went to Ismailia, to a holding camp, where we drew up all the equipment for the battery and regiment that was following us out. From there, we moved and established a camp at the side of the Great Bitter Lakes, what they called 9BAD, near there. And I can remember setting up the officers' tents. And when they arrived, they said, we don't want to be there. We don't want to be there. We're over there, more isolated. Where I'd already been advised about what went on in the camp. So the officers were all moved over there. Within 24 hours, they wanted to come back. Once the colonel woke up and there was don't want to call him a wog, but there was a native in there looking at his photographs and things on his things and coming during the night, they realised it was far better to be in the centre of the camp than way isolated outside.
Now, what was this camp near? What town was it near?
There was no town there, was there, Anna?
What, 90 AD?
Yeah.
It was a good ride from Ismailia.
It was between Ismailia and Suez. On the Great Bitter Lakes.
And what was your job then out there?
I was a quartermaster.
What was your job as quartermaster? Battery quartermaster or regimental quartermaster?
Battery quartermaster. I was in charge of ammunition, vehicles, all the equipment, and food. Because the food was indented for through the... I'll think of the words now.
So that was all that was what you were doing. Yeah. And how did you find it out there?
Quite pleasant, really. We had a good social life. It wasn't too good when I got sent up into Palestine with the Stern Gang people about.
Tell us about that, Liz.
Well, we got moved up to Palestine to do sort of guard duties. Although we were artillery, we were being used as guard duties on Ramat David Airfield and Rafah on the edge of the Sinai Desert. It was on the end of the edge of the Sinai Desert. And we moved camp from the Sinai to go and do the perimeter guard on Ramat David Airfield. And I was left there in charge of the rear party. And from the lower camp, they phoned me up and said they were being bothered with scavengers coming in. Well, I say scavengers, they're natives coming in, pilfering anything. So I went down to that camp, and they're all sitting out like vultures waiting to come in. And I took a rifle and I fired it into the air, and they vanished. I said, so if anything happens, just let a bullet, let a round go, it'll keep them away. I went back to my camp. The next thing I knew, they were phoning me up saying that one of the Arabs had been shot. Apparently, they didn't do what I'd instructed them to do. They chased them over the desert, firing the rifle, and with the jeep going up and down and bang, they shot one. So I had the Corps of Military Police, the Palestine Police, and the Sinai Police all involved in this incident.
So what happened?
Well, I don't know the exact outcome. Funny enough, I don't know the exact outcome of it. I put in my report and that was it. But
what about the actual problems with the Stern Gang? Did you have any trouble while you were there with them?
No, I didn't. It was on around us. We heard of incidents of some soldiers being killed in an orange grove and things of that nature. But I didn't personally experience anything myself. There was a time there when I was quartermaster and I was also doing guard duties. Well, as a quartermaster, you're not supposed to do guard duties. But I was doing it because it was filling in, it was necessary. And the battery commander came in the office and spoke to me, and he explained to me on the trip he had been. And I said to him, well, it's all very well for you, sir. I said, it's all very well for the sergeants. I said, they do a guard duty, then they're in bed. I do a guard duty and I come in here and carry on with my office work. And he said something along the lines, don't be such a bloody moaner, Stevens. If you want to go on the trip I've been on, do it. And I organised an American Dodge, two senior officers of the RAF, a couple of my companions, and we went to Jerusalem, Nazareth, Bethlehem, swam in the Dead Sea, went round the back of the Dead Sea, up to Damascus. From Damascus, we went over the Libyans, the ruins of Baalbek, down into Beirut, back down the coast road to Haifa, and back to Ramat David Airfield.
And that was a holiday, sort of?
Yeah, 4 or 5 days off.
And how long were you in Palestine?
went there twice and come back. It was only for a few months at a time.
And did you always come back to the Bitter Lake camp?
I came back there. I think we'd done it twice. We came back to the Bitter Lake camp.
And anything else you remember about your time out there? There was a story about how you lost your promotion now.
Yeah. Now, you're going to put it on there.
Yeah.
Right.
Tell the whole story.
His shoulder.
Well, there was several NAFI personnel used to meet up on the WO's Lido at the beach on the Great Bitter Lakes. One of them was Ina, who is now my wife. Although I didn't keep company with her at the time we were there. She asked if I could help her to see her brother coming through the canal. I said yes. So we arranged a recreational truck to go to Suez and meet a brother. But when we got there, he didn't dock. He was too far out at sea. He was going up the canal the next day to Port Said. So we arranged the same trip again. All authentic. Read instructions on the work ticket, recreational training. We went from 9 BAD to Ishmaelia. And at Ishmaelia, you can go the Treaty Road or the Canal Road. The Canal Road is out of bounds to all vehicles, their staff cars and jeeps. But NAFI manager S. Davis kept pleading to go on the Canal Road to see her brother. So eventually, I agreed to do it. We went on the Canal Road. On arriving at Port Said, I noticed the shipping agent's office. And I stopped to go in to inquire where the ship was. And when I came out, there was a staff officer, Officer OC Troops Port Side, at the vehicle. And he said, "I followed you out of Ishmaelia and my driver hasn't been able to catch you until you stopped here. And you know this is out of bounds," he said, "you will be hearing further from us." And as he walked away, Ina, who is now my wife, said, "What do you need to speak to you like that for?"
So what happened then? The result?
I was on a charge. I was up in front of the commander of the Royal Artillery. He started off by saying that the colonel had given me a good character. I was a stalwart of the regiment. I'd been with the regiment from 1938. And I was a good soldier. And then he suddenly said, "How can you be? If you were, you wouldn't be here on this charge. You can accept a court-martial, accept my punishment, or a court-martial." So I accepted his punishment. And he told me to revert to sergeant by order, but to continue to do the job of quartermaster. So I was doing a quartermaster job on sergeant's pay.
How did you feel about that?
Well, I suppose in one sense I was lucky. It could have been worse.
And any other memories of your time out there?
Your arm.
Oh, did you? Well, we used to drink quite a bit in the sergeant's mess at this time. And I, being a quartermaster, was in a Nissen hut on my own. And I went back to the hut and went to sleep. And I woke up the next morning and it was as though I didn't have a left arm. It was completely limp, useless in any fashion. I couldn't move it without using my right arm to pick it up. So I had to go to see the medical officer. The medical officer examined me and said, "Did you have anything to drink last night?" I said, "Well, I wasn't drunk." He said, "I'm asking you, did you have anything to drink last night?" I said, "Well, enough to make me go to sleep." He said, "Yes, that's what you've done." Being as I was sleeping on a mattress, on a palliasse thing, on an iron bed, my arm had gone over the side of the iron bed. And I had slept on it all night long and killed the nerves. And in actual fact, much to my surprise, it was put in a plaster cast for several days for it to recover.
But it did.
It did, yeah. We had been to Port Said to see Anna's brother. She had gone onto the boat to visit him, and the captain on the boat said he would accept her dog, providing she took the parrot off the boat. So she took the parrot and left her dog with her brother, brought the parrot back to us. And on the journey back to 9BAD, during the night, the parrot went from one shoulder, round my neck, back onto the other shoulder, and he had a choke chain round my neck, which I woke up with this choke chain round my neck.
You were being choked.
And I was calling the parrot different things.
Anything else about your time out there?
Nothing really, I don't think.
Just a routine life then?
Yes.
Did you like it out there? I mean.
Oh, yes, yes. It was because the social life had started coming back into the army. You had a sergeant's mess.
Tell me about the sergeant's mess. What was the sergeant's mess like?
You had a mess hall where you were waited on by ORs. You had a sergeant's mess cook as opposed to the battery cook. You had plates and knives and forks and everything laid out for you. You had a bar in which you could drink. You had a barman. And it was part of a quartermaster's job to run the bar. Barman run it, but the quartermaster went in every morning and checked the optics and the cash and kept a line on sales and things like that. That became, in those days, a part of the quartermaster's job. There was socials in there where some of the naffy girls used to come and visit us and spend an evening playing darts. Eggs used to be lined up in glasses for when you were going home at night to put the Worcester sauce in and have two or three slugs of raw eggs and Worcester sauce to help the beer stay down.
How did you drink a lot then? Had you started to drink?
Well, you always drunk enough to go to sleep. You didn't get drunk. But I'm not saying everybody, because there were some who didn't drink, but most drunk. And you always drunk enough to go to sleep.
Now, how long were you out there? You went in October 45.
I came back from the Middle East in January 47.
And what was the journey back like?
Rough on the med.
Seasick
again. Our boat was out of control. He was pumping a signal out on the hooter, which I understood meant, I can't navigate, you keep away from me. And the port of Toulon was in our sight. We could see it. But we rowed out there for some time before we got in. And on that trooper, we went down to the decks below, where you rather like going back to the early days at the Woolwich Barracks. Six along there, six along there. And a control personnel, the people on the boat, came along and said, who's the senior officer on this table? And a staff sergeant said, I am. And I just sat at the end and kept quiet. You will be in charge of these men for the duration of the crossing, see that they get this, that and the other. Away he went. And then this sergeant looked at me and said, you're the senior. So I said, yes. He said, you're in charge. I said, all right, I'm in charge. I said, I'm going up to the top deck. I'm never coming down below again. If you want me in charge, I'm up there. And on this trip, I was again very sick. And the toilets for the personnel was a long plank with 10 holes in it. And I sat down. And being the sea, the bilge went woof, and it was all up, cigarette butts and everybody else's all in my trousers. And I'm standing in a salt water shower salt water shower, trying to get myself clean, which I did the best I could, and went back up on deck. And during the course of one of the nights, a red cap came up to me and said, "Everybody must sleep below decks." And I said to him, "I'm staying here, and if you want me below decks, drag me." And he left me there. But it was, again, a terrible seasick experience to me.
And you were pulling into which port?
Toulouse.
What happened then?
Got on a train, brought us up to Calais. We stopped in a camp at Calais, and then came over to England and went to Aldershot, where we received your clothes, your D-mob suit, where we received our D-mob suit and clothes. And
what did you think of your D-mob suit?
Well, it was very good at the time, and in fact, it was good. Then I was on D-mob, but it was 56 days, and I knew I'd taken the leave to get out of, so that I could get out of the Middle East. And I was going to re-enlist and chance where they sent me. And I was going down Whitehall with Joe Razinkaitis, who had been on the fishing fleet out of Grimsby, who was an old army friend of mine, and we were both going to join together. And we're walking down Whitehall, and Major Wise came along. And we bashed into him. We all went and had a good drink, and I never got into the office to re-enlist. A few days after that, I received a letter from Newcastle. It was from Ina. "I'm coming down to London, and I would like to see you again." I went to King's Cross Station and met her on April the 1st. Of all days, April the 1st.
Didn't even know his second name.
And I never went back into the army. Some months later, we got married.
Now, what about getting back into a post-war career? Did you find it difficult?
Very difficult.
Could you find work, or what did you do?
No, I was a window cleaner. And then my second child was coming, and I thought I had to get established in some shape or form. And I went to St. Stephen's Hospital, after an advert at St. Stephen's Hospital in Maze Lane, Barnet. And I started work there as a nursing orderly. From there, I went to the Hertfordshire Fire and Ambulance Brigade. But I still didn't find it enough money to maintain the family. I went to the Hertfordshire Fire and Ambulance Brigade. I went from there to the Refuge Insurance Company as an agent. Then I found I could get a job with the Ministry of Security, and I was on government buildings, working four nights a week, or two nights a week, and Saturday and Sunday day.
You were acting as, you were security?
Security. I was there for some time and got rather bored with it. And I applied for a job with the Bromley Wine Company as a salesman. I worked for them for 4 years.
66 to 70.